There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
From your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Let me get in there. Oh, spooky. God, spooky lady. Spooky, spooky lady. You don't want to.
Oh, that's a spooky lady.
Ooh,
oh.
Spooky lady.
Spooky. Hey, spooky. Where that goes there? You spooky.
I've been thinking about a lot about the girl bossing of Madame Lalaurie, and I know it's going to happen.
The girl boss version of Madame
Lalaurie.
I mean,
wasn't happen.
That Kathy Bates? I didn't watch the American Horror Story Coven, but wasn't she sort of girl boss Madame Lalaurie?
A little bit, but they haven't gone full. Like I was saying, we get J-Law. She's bringing new, the name's Delphine. No, it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
It's all going to be Garcia. It's all her music. They're going to turn her into a hero. I don't know how. I think they're going to say that they were like, I was hiding him from my horrible husband. Right?
I mean, if they turn her into a sandwich, I can't wait for that.
Whoa, the BK Lalaurie.
Welcome to the last podcast on the left, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Marcus Parks with Henry Zebrowski and Ed Larson.
Spooky! That's a spooky lady! Hey, you over there, ghost! You spooky!
So when we last left Madame Lalaurie, she just moved into 1140 Royal Street in the French Quarter of New Orleans with her husband, Dr. Louis Lalaurie. And this is a little detail that we had neglected to mention. She had 5 children from her 2 previous marriages.
Oh, yeah.
And they all lived in this house.
Oh, yes. Man. She, I want to say their kids in the end, like it ranged, they all had like 30 years between them by the end.
It was a lot.
Yeah. She must have been hot. Like, if you're going to marry, like, an older woman with 5 kids.
Yeah, dude. No, like, she was.
I think she was rich.
Oh.
She was hot, too, though. If you see pictures of Delphine Lalaurie, she was stately. She was considered very beautiful porcelain skin.
Those portraits, however, are not originals.
Doctored! Whoa, it's AI! It's Instagram! Spooky lady!
Those were done for the 1892 book, many years after she did, after she died. So we don't actually know what Madame Lalaurie looked like.
No, I heard that pussy be busting. Like,
yeah,
they said
we know
a couple...
it was busting. Yeah, we know that. But we don't know exactly what she looked like. You know, I would imagine she would be one of those women you describe as severe looking.
It's weird. I actually saw the opposite. She said she was soft. That's why the true horrors, when they were revealed, were extra shocking. Because no pretty woman would ever do something bad.
Jody Eriks, Casey Anthony.
I'm sorry.
But as soon as Madame Lalaurie and the doctor moved into the city, that's where the legends truly begin. Now, some of these legends are, of course, total horseshit. But others may have a kernel of truth to them.
That's what makes a good legend.
Yes, the kernel of truth. You gotta have something that's half true. See, according to Victoria Love, the author of the more sensationalist of the 2 books we used, it was believed that Dr. Lalaurie was testing Haitian-style zombie drugs to induce cooperation and docility in enslaved people that were proving troublesome, a sort of chemical lobotomy.
Weekend at Bernie 2 stuff.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Honestly, more like Weekend at Bernie's 4 stuff. It's going to be hard to go back to the 1880s until we have the time machine version, which is Weekend at Bernie's 3.
Yeah. These experiments, if they did happen, were of course failures, and the poor poisoned souls who didn't survive were, of course, thrown in the swamp. This one is unlikely.
Sure.
If only because the cost of such experiments, $25,000 in modern currency per victim, was prohibitively high for even a person as wealthy as Madame Lalaurie.
We also know that scopolamine is effective, but it does have a range of effects.
Yes.
And it does not necessarily make you a living zombie, but it can. I guess if you just are in the right mood or if you haven't eaten lunch. I don't know. I've not used scopolamine anytime recently.
Do you smoke it or do you just rub it in your eyes?
You blow it.
You do.
Yeah. Oh.
It's a powder that you can, it's supposed to activate a zombie-like condition.
Ooh, wow, like the Iceman used to use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should watch The Serpent in the Rainbow.
Okay.
Yeah. It's good.
Yo, you'll love it. Yeah, you'll absolutely love it.
You never seen Serpent in the Rainbow?
Never even heard of it.
Right up your alley.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other legend that seems less likely, but I think might partly be true, is the story of the so-called devil baby.
Give me them tits, mummy. Where's that milk, mummy? I'm gonna finger you before I come out.
Yeah, the first thing the doctor saw was just a middle finger come out of her
pussy. Fuck you! Let me stay next to the clit. Do you need all these eggs?
This one has an extra kick because it also involves another legendary New Orleans citizen, Marie Laveau, the voodoo queen.
We need to do an episode on her someday.
We absolutely will. Now, supposedly, Marie Laveau came across an insane, deformed child that was the spawn of a mortal woman and a demon. Laveau, in turn, sought out Madame LaLaurie and gave the grotesque demonic child to her for reasons that are unclear.
Yeah, let me see the dick, too. Stretch it out. Yeah, stretch your dick, Eddie. Make it a wristwatch. Incredible. Now make it a hammock. Oh, my God. We'll take it on the road.
The child was then kept in darkness for 5 years, screaming and drooling, whoa, eating only raw meat until it finally died.
Now, you're saying that this was in New Orleans, Louisiana at this time period and not in Southern Florida, 1981.
I hate cooked burgers.
Yeah, the biggest baby you've ever born in Florida. Yeah, this does sound like an origin story.
There was a new baby born. People have been sending to me. It was smaller. There's a new 15. Yeah. They keep writing it was 15. It was 14 pounds, 8 ounces. I was 14 pounds. 13 and a half ounces, this baby ain't shit, stop sending it to me.
Yeah, they're putting sawdust in its diaper. Like it's a fucking, like it's cheating at bobsledding.
Now, this devil baby story admittedly sounds insane from beginning to end.
Sure.
But remember, Dr. LaLaurie was supposedly a student of medical abnormalities, and the truth might be even more horrifying than the legend. From descriptions of the devil baby, it could be that this child was suffering from the infamous Harlequin syndrome. Now, this birth defect creates huge diamond-shaped scales over every inch of the baby's body, and the spaces in between those scales are constant open wounds because the skin never stops splitting.
Grayscale.
No, this is so much worse.
Worse than grayscale?
Yeah, you like are, how do you put it?
Pain.
Yeah, you're a charcuterie plate.
Yeah.
With the bread biscuits. Is what's the only thing you can kind of literally hang your hat on.
Yeah. Okay.
Additionally, the heads, arms, and legs of the Harlequin baby are severely malformed, and the eyes are often blood red. And sometimes there's no eyelids, there's no eye holes. It's like two red dots kind of pasted on the eraser head baby.
Yeah.
Why didn't they kill it?
Well,
if, say, someone in 1830 in New Orleans was to give birth to a child with this defect and they truly believed it was a demonic being because Harlequin babies at their worst look truly inhuman, they might bring it to Marie Laveau.
Yeah, man. It's definitely, if you've never seen a picture of a Harlequin baby.
No.
Look it up. You'll love it. It's you'll love it. It's very much like if this was 2011, you'd see a picture of a Harlequin baby and underneath it, you see hashtag mood. Mm. You know what I mean? The struggle is real. Like when you see a Harlequin baby. Well,
it's New Orleans. If it was modern day New Orleans, they'd probably just fry it up.
Yeah. Ooh. Where are you going in New Orleans these days? You're going to different restaurants than I am.
Hustler Club. Horrible, horrible, horrible kitchen. Great, great atmosphere.
You talk about that one that's off the highway out near the airport.
Yeah, they have this great tank filled with abortions that you can just scoop out. You get to pick it like it's a lobster.
Yeah, but there is one lobster in there.
Oh, she must have visited SeaWorld.
But if Dr. LaLaurie was well known as a doctor who studied medical abnormalities, Laveau might have brought the Harlequin baby to him.
Sure. Just to be like, you see, want to see something fucked up? But yeah, and he would have been like, yo, oui.
However, there is no way in hell that a Harlequin baby would survive for 5 days in 1830, much less 5 years. But even so, this story might actually be half or at least a quarter true.
Well, because we know that, we don't know. But we think that we know that he worked on Delphine LaLaurie's daughter.
Yeah.
And we know that he, at the time, showed up as this like hotshot new doctor that's like, you know, did he had a Ghostbuster sign with a hunchback behind it because his whole model was no hunchbacks, no yep. mo.
Hated it.
Yeah, hated him. I gotta sit up. Yeah, sit up. Literally, do this. Yeah. Cobra your back. But people might have viewed him as just like, okay, you like Crooked Bones.
Yeah.
Like we'll bring them all to you.
Yeah. That may be. I mean, Harlequin syndrome does have like degrees. Like I know there's a Harlequin baby that's alive at like 6 or 7 or something like that. But yeah, in the absolute worst cases, like, yeah, it is like the most horrifying thing you could possibly see.
Like I'm a 32nd degree Harlequin baby. Yeah. Right? Because I made it to the top. I have the apron.
Your skin is quite red. That is true.
Yeah, it's pink. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that is true.
And they say I look like a pig.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, see, these are Harlequin babies. They all look like this.
Oh, I've seen this before.
Yeah, you see this?
Amber
yeah.
always sends me these.
Yeah.
I get so mad. It's just like, it's fucking 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Now, there are no records of excessive abuse towards enslaved people before Madame LaLaurie was married to Dr. LaLaurie. But perhaps it was their relocation to the French Quarter from an isolated plantation that brought more attention to her methods.
Now, this is actually under some debate. So certain books talk about how the family knew that Delphine was bad with the groups.
Oh,
right?
Well, that's what I mean. It's like the family knew.
The family. And there was one promissory note that was discovered by the author of Madame LaLaurie, Mistress of the Haunted House,
yeah.
where it shows that she did pay a very prominent defense attorney a certain sum of money during this time period. So they do think that maybe she had charges brought up several times. That is kind of the, which is rumor, but it seemed to be kind of solid what we know now.
Yeah.
Is that there were a lot of people saying, like, we think Delphine might be extra rough with some of her people.
Mm-hmm. Well, soon enough, the rumors of how she treated the people in her household were so numerous that the authorities entered the LaLaurie mansion to investigate. Once they entered, they found that some of the enslaved people therein had been recently bloodied from a fierce beating, and all of them were almost starved to death. From accounts, Madame LaLaurie took perverse pleasure in watching them waste away before her very eyes and gave them only enough food to be able to work. But this was also a setup. Because if you're that malnourished, you're probably not going to do your tasks with great competence. And if you're making mistakes, then that gives Madame LaLaurie another excuse to punish you.
Never-ending punishment wheel.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that we see, like, you see this in sociopathic personalities all the time. You know, they set other people up to fail, so that gives them an excuse to commit the horrible atrocities that they commit.
Sounds like a nun.
Yes. Sounds like how, in a vague level, when my mom used to feed us and feed us and feed us, right? And then when I'd have to go to the Husky store to get my pants when I got hit about a 44-inch waist, right? Bordering on 46, she'd be like, if only you could put down some of that food. You know what yeah. I mean? When you're then getting shamed.
But then the whole time she's been using food as the only means to communicate love to you.
Yeah, well, comfort and stability in its way.
Yeah, my mom used to always tell me, you got to drink less. And then I'd come home, there'd be like a bottle of whiskey and a 30-pack. And you're just like, it's just me.
Yeah, yeah. Because sometimes it also being like, are you afraid of me? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, is this about me keeping me satiated? Because if I'm not hungry or if I'm not thirsty, I'm going to, if I am one of those, I'm going to fucking freak out.
No, the most intoxicated Christmas I ever spent was at your mother's house.
Hell yeah, that was a good one.
That was a great one.
I got you a knife.
Yeah, that was wonderful. That was one of my favorite Christmases ever.
It was from the kitchen.
But since no witnesses came forward to declare that the Madame was seen beating these people with her own hands, and as I said in the first episode, treatment of enslaved people was often a matter of taste, she was absolved of any wrongdoing by the courts. It is said, however, that the embarrassment of the court case only made Madame LaLaurie that much more cruel.
They also believe she did one of those, like, I'm innocent!
Yeah.
Like she went in where it's like, yeah, the oath, where you could just say you're innocent. And they're like, you know what? Now that I heard you say it, you sound correct.
But even though no witness came forward in her court case, it was a story from a neighbor that created one of the LaLaurie mansion's most enduring ghost tales. One day, that neighbor heard a piercing scream and looked from her adjacent townhouse to see Madame Lalaurie chasing a young enslaved girl, whip in hand. The chase then entered the house and eventually ended up on the roof. But while the neighbor did not see exactly what transpired, she heard the body of the young girl hit the ground in the courtyard below. She later saw the lifeless body being taken away and saw the shallow grave where the young girl was buried. Today, this young girl is known as Leah, and it's said that her spirit roams even as far away as the sidewalks outside Lalaurie Mansion, where people have reported feeling a tug at their clothes at the mention of her name.
This story is actually, it's in all of the ghost tours.
Yeah.
Right? And there's a lot of, you know, people to call doubt on it, because that neighbor, it's the idea that the neighbor heard something, was physically unable to see it, even if they wanted to
yeah.
know what was going on. But what we know about Madame Lalaurie, we know that for a fact that she liked to hurt her enslaved people over the top. We know that she liked to do that. But we also, the main crux of this is that we know, if you look at percentages of how many enslaved people died.
And we'll get more into that later.
Yes. Under her care, quote unquote, her care, you would see that it points to a lot of young girls
yeah.
died in yeah. that house that did not need to. And in pairs, quite often the mother and the daughter would die. And there was just a lot of them.
Yeah. And we got a listener email from someone who was actually able to go into the Lalaurie Mansion.
Oh, wow.
And at the party that they attended, they said that they were allowed to go up on the roof. Like, they was like, okay, yeah, go up on there. You know, you can see all of New Orleans. Like, it's a beautiful
view. And everyone
says
the roof is where all of the bad juju is. Because
yeah.
that's where the room where the enslaved people were found, were on the non-existent third floor.
Yeah. But yeah, they said that up there, like, they couldn't stand up. They started to feel sick. They started to feel dizzy, you know, like no issues with heights or anything like that, but no, and really no like health issues. But they said it was the worst feeling they've ever had in their life, without really knowing like the full story of what had happened up there or what had, you know, happened up there, according to legend. Now, no skeletons or bodies were found on the Lalaurie grounds over the years, or at least there are no records of bodies being found. But according to funeral records at the St. Louis Cathedral, 20 people died while being enslaved to Madame Lalaurie over the decades. Now, I know the mortality rate for enslaved people was high, especially those who worked in the sugar plantations of Louisiana. If a person was sent there, it was called being, quote, sold downriver, and it was all but a death sentence.
Because there's many ways to die. Heat exhaustion, dehydration.
Industrial accident.
Industrial accident, malaria, you know, being bit by bugs. Like, it's
just straight being beaten to death.
Yes.
Also was, you know, quite common.
Also, she's like 3 blocks from the river, from the Mississippi. She could have just been dumping the bodies in there.
Well, they are, there's a lot of witnesses. This is a barely, you know, even at the time period, this is an extremely popular section of town.
It's right by the French Quarter.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. And there's a lot of people coming and going, and it is still contested about whether or not she had some form of unofficial graveyard on her grounds, because yeah. that was one of those things that was supposed, you know, that the biggest version of the legend, they found it, but there's some talk about these missing bodies, like, where the fuck did they go? Because yeah. they do, in one thing within the state of Louisiana, is that they kept copious notes on the ledgers of people who were coming in and out of these places, and especially death registries. They don't put how they died, but they did put, like, they would track everybody. And it went from the moneyed people to the enslaved people. And the fact that there was a huge, I mean, like, of the amount of people that were at her place, there was a huge chunk of them that just disappeared.
I mean, were they tracking the gaitas?
Oh, yeah, I
could have been eating these people.
No, not yeah. why you need me to a laundry. Go down there. You could get a gator with two fingers. That's all you need. Get down there. Down in the bayou now.
Looking real good. Get in the ear.
Look at it.
Gator, it got 19 hole, right? Got no mouth hole. They got a 2 eyeball. They got a pussy hole. They got a butthole. And I get them 2 in the pussy and the butthole, give them the double pink. Get them up in a bona.
But here's the incredible thing about the statistics when it comes to Madame LaLaurie is that we really don't know exactly how many people disappeared. Who knows? But because of the copious records, we know for a fact that in the 2 years that she was at 1140 Royal Street, just in those 2 years, 12 enslaved people died in that house. You know, and this is just people who are doing household duties. These are like people cooking, people cleaning, you know, footmen, you know, guys, chauffeurs, you know, just people who are just doing regular stuff. And they're dying at a rate that is, you know, as high as a sugar plantation. It's insane.
Every other month. Yeah. And they also are... There are unregistered deaths, just straight up disappearances.
Yeah.
So there are just a bunch of them, about 20, that have no record of what happened to them.
Can I ask an ignorant question?
Yeah.
Always.
So do people come and like check up on you to make sure that you're not killing your slaves?
No.
There wasn't like a regulatory industry or anything like that. No, there was nothing like that. It was just if somebody could report you, and then
the idea of a slave inspector is just not. I don't know if you want that guy.
No, around.
I mean, you don't invite him to dinner.
No. He works for Allstate. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's one of our sponsors.
Well, you know, Prudential.
Die from your grave.
But considering the rate at which these people were dying in jobs that were not dangerous, it's likely that these deaths were caused by the cruel actions of Madame LaLaurie. And with that, let's get into what is most likely the true story of what was going on in the LaLaurie mansion. And the story of how her chamber of horrors was discovered. It all started with a fire in the kitchen on a spring morning in 1834. According to witnesses at the scene, one of the elderly cooks admitted to starting the fire on purpose, to either put an end to the suffering of the people trapped above or to finally expose the madame once and for all.
It sounds like something finally broke inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because the main crew that were not locked upstairs in the room obviously kind of figured out, like, oh, we're gonna end up there anyway.
Yeah,
you know, like, it doesn't, us being quote unquote good at our jobs is probably not gonna save us from whatever the fuck is going on in that room.
No, this woman was also chained to the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like chains were an everyday part of everybody's existence in that house. Or at least if you were an enslaved person, then yeah, you were wearing chains constantly, which, you know, in other households, like, that was kept as like a particularly bad pun. Like, shackles was considered like a punishment.
Yeah.
And in Madame LaLaurie's house, it was, you know, an everyday thing. Punishment and starvation. That's what all these people were going through 100%, you know, all the time.
Yeah, it's the way we compare it to the Nazis quite often. It's because it's when you have institutionalized violence, when it's allowed from up top, then it breeds little serial killers.
Yeah.
Also, when the people working for you are so unhealthy, they're going to fuck up, you know?
And yeah, like, that's part of what you're saying, the never-ending cycle.
Yeah, always. No, this really is, like, this is the sort of institution that, you know, as you said, like, it brings people to the forefront. You know, the people who have these sadistic personalities, these sadistic tendencies, like, they come to the forefront and, you know, the most vulnerable people always suffer. You know, it's like the Einsatzgruppen we talk about so much, just roving bands of serial killers.
He never stops talking about it.
It's one of the most fascinating, you know, chapters in history is the Einsatzgruppen. Like, it really is just roving bands of serial killers in the tens of thousands that they sent out behind the SS during World War II out in Eastern Europe. Now, the fire soon got big enough where a crowd of New Orleans regulars gathered to watch the mansion burn down. But when they saw that nobody was coming out, a judge in the crowd gave an order to break down the locked doors so they could save the enslaved people inside from a fiery death. Good Samaritans rushed into the burning building and found that the enslaved people inside, those that weren't hidden away, were still, as I said, emaciated, covered in horrific scars, and loaded with chains that they presumably had to wear every day. But then the rescuers found Madame LaLaurie's torture chamber, which had been built next to the servants' quarters to add an extra layer of psychological torture to even those who weren't being actively tortured and killed.
This is truly a scene from a horror movie.
Yeah.
In this time period, because they go in, it's this beautifully appointed home. You know what I mean? It really is. And you, Delphine LaLaurie is known as a socialite whose husband's not really around a lot. They have undisclosed problems, but they think it's just because, you know, and many times they probably think, oh, Dr. LaLaurie is probably out there sowing his wild oats. I actually wonder whether or not he was scared of his own wife and didn't want to have anything to do with the house anymore. And that's why he left. But you go into this, like, this palatial mansion at the time, beautiful appointments, and then it's nothing but horror on the inside. You've never seen the inside of this house when it wasn't prepped to be seen, you know?
Well, not only that, but the, I mean, this is the palatial side. Like, that's what everybody sees. Like, the servants' quarters, like, nobody's going in there.
No one's going in there.
No one's going in there. Like, you wouldn't go, like...
If you went over there for dinner, you wouldn't go over. You wouldn't go over that area, right? You wouldn't do that, quote unquote, right?
No, you absolutely wouldn't go over there. Like, it's just, that's just... In that society, those sorts of places are off limits, or at least you just wouldn't have any interest in it. The rescuers opened the door and found seven people chained to the wall, 4 women, 2 men, and one whose gender was unrecorded. All, however, had been mutilated from head to toe. Some had been suspended by their limbs to such a degree that their extremities had been torn from their sockets, while others had been tied into contorted postures meant to maximize pain and discomfort. One victim was said to have had a large hole in his head, and his wounds were filled with maggots. Many of them had infested wounds. Each was wearing an iron collar with spikes that kept their heads in one position, lest their necks be stabbed. A cowhide whip, stiff with dried blood, hung against the wall next to a stepladder that Madame LaLaurie stood upon for downward momentum to make the lashes deeper. Later, it was said by surviving witnesses that every morning after breakfast, Madame LaLaurie would lock herself in with the captives and flog or otherwise torture them until she tired herself out. Then she would simply go about her day as a New Orleans socialite and businesswoman.
Now, this account comes from, it is interesting because, again,
this is the true stuff.
This is the real shit. According to a judge, so this judge was the first guy on the scene. So when the fire broke out, they were like, we need to go help all the people inside. And he was the guy that was in front prying open this door because Delphine LaLaurie had already fucking bugged out. Like, as soon
not
as
it, quite. She was not. She hadn't quite bugged out.
But
just
she
yet.
Didn't want people to go inside the house, and they were like, "No, no, you were like they bypassed her. They're like, no, we're going in the house."
So was she like standing out front screaming?
Yes. Yeah, she's standing out front. They're not, and she's like, "No, don't go in my house." And they're like, "There's fucking people inside there. We have to go inside the house."
Yeah. And so, because again, very interesting, millions of dollars in today's money worth of goods to antiques. Jewelries, all this kind of stuff that she was just going to let go, right? So she didn't. So it just he popped it open, and when he saw that, he was the one who wrote the main account of what happened.
Yeah.
What are the chances she started the fire?
Zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
She didn't want anybody in there.
What most people think is that like they went inside and they found the cook, you know, and the fire was put out very easily. The fire was put out pretty quickly, and they put out the fire in the kitchen and they found the cook who had started the fire. She was chained to the floor. And she had to ask, like, why did you start this fire? And she said, go look upstairs.
Yeah.
Like go open up the door upstairs and you'll see why I started this fire. Like I couldn't, none of us could handle this anymore.
It's pretty badass.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It's intense.
This woman was putting her life on the line for this. Everyone was. Now, the survivors were quickly removed and taken to the nearest place where they could receive medical care, which for some reason was the mayor's office.
I think it was because of their state of being.
Yeah.
I think they were brought to the mayor's office as literally a look at how they're mistreating this situation. They're mistreating their enslaved people. It immediately went into investigation.
Yeah, but they also said in the books that like that's where they would receive medical care. But
can you imagine going to the mayor to have that like Gavin Newsom being like, yeah, you got strep throat. That'll be $75,000.
He's already telling me that. Are you uncovering California? It's a fucking disaster.
Well, from my recollection, I think the old mayor's office was down the street from the LaLaurie mansion. And also there were vampires in the mayor's attic, if I'm remembering what our tour guide said correctly.
Yes.
If that was the mayor's office. But there was at least a church/mayor's office down the street, and there were vampires up in the attic, and they said that, like,
this is where like the Catholic Church has put like cursed objects for years, and they they boarded up a room up there.
That's cool.
But once Madame LaLaurie's victims were safe, the editors of the two biggest newspapers in New Orleans got a good look at their condition, and a further 2,000 New Orleans residents visited to see what Madame LaLaurie had done for themselves. Like a big parade of people came by. They're like, you got to see what this woman's been doing.
It was big news. People freaked out.
2,000's a big crowd.
Yeah, that's huge, especially for 1830 or 1833. By estimates, all of the enslaved people rescued had been kept in that chamber for months, and they were so starved that a couple of them died when some good-intentioned people gave them too much food too quickly. Same thing that happened with the concentration camps. In the chamber, authorities also found torture implements like pincers and the aforementioned iron collars with sharpened points, neither of which could be explained away as more of Dr. LaLaurie's orthopraxy equipment. Now, the newspapers were outraged, and the people on the street were so incensed upon seeing the bodies of Madame LaLaurie's victims, living and dead, that they smashed every inch of the mansion to pieces, as if the house itself was the culprit of these horrific crimes.
This is, to me, that points towards that something really, that this really happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. Because there's a lot of over the years, how many different stories have we covered that you find out that shit is fucking exaggerated or like made up just for the story of it? This is one of those that it feels like they had to minimize it to talk about it. Like everybody flip the fuck out and just attack the house.
For 2 days.
Yeah.
I mean, like they went to sleep and came back the next day to finish the job.
It's like one of those things where like you hear about shit going down, but then when you find out what really happened, you just go nuts.
Yeah. But after the sheriff decided that enough was enough, after letting the people lay waste to the mansion for the rest of that day and a little bit the day after, nothing in the house remained intact save for the walls themselves. People didn't even loot the expensive furniture and instead chose to smash all of Madame LaLaurie's possessions into pieces, which all that was then turned into a bonfire on Royal Street.
That's the shit, because that's the stuff. It's that looting is one thing. Because you pop it open, I understand everybody going in there and grabbing cool stuff out of there because you had a bunch of cool stuff to grab. But the idea then you're just going to burn it?
Yeah.
You got to be mad. That's one spooky lady.
We used to do that in Tallahassee. My buddies, they were violent. This is before I knew you. My buddies were kind of violent, and they'd always break my furniture when they got too drunk and shit. Sure.
Yeah.
So one year on 4th of July, there was a thrift store across the street, and I bought a bunch of shitty furniture, and I put it in the back next to a sledgehammer and an axe. I was like, have fun. And then they did, and then we lit it all on fire.
You actually just learned how to be a father to children. That's what you got to do.
Actually, in Lubbock, we had kind of a tradition. There was this yearly concert called Easter Bash, and that what people would do is they would go to thrift stores and they would bring couches to Easter Bash, and then at the end of the concert you set all the couches on fire.
That's awesome.
This is back when Lubbock was like super fun.
Man, I think we could do it again. I just made a smash room for the stream.
Yeah, that is true.
We gotta do more smash rooms.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we're gonna get to it. But perhaps people took their anger out on the house because Madame LaLaurie herself was long gone. See, once it became clear that her horrible secret was being uncovered and the mood was turning ugly, Madame LaLaurie and her family climbed into a carriage to escape.
Yeah, they bugged the living fuck out.
And it took a while, though.
Well, it's because they were kind of feeling and like, maybe we can think about this and get past this juncture.
Yeah.
And then it turns out like, no. Oh, they're going to kill us.
Well, once they fled, that was it. They're not coming back.
Yeah.
Because the crowd noticed the madame attempting to flee. They tried overturning the carriage. They tried grabbing her and pulling her out. I mean, they could have ripped her limb from limb right then and there. I think that's what they had in mind.
I mean, how fast could this carriage possibly be going?
It's the horses. Horses kicking. The guy's got Bastion. Her man servant, the guy that was like her number one guy. You are my number one guy. Like she did that to him. He was hitting guys with the whip.
Were any of her kids with her?
I think so. Yeah. I think the kids were loaded up.
They were traumatized.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I don't know if they were.
Oh, no, we'll find out later on as they both died. The kids that were closest to Delphine LaLaurie's lives were absolutely gutted. They never had a career. They never did anything. Yeah. They just lived inside of her home. Her other children from the previous marriages, they went on and did stuff. Some of them actually had lives and got rid of the LaLaurie name and hid far away. But the ones that were directly connected to her, they didn't blossom.
Well, the ones who actually had the last name, LaLaurie.
Yes.
Because there were still, like, there were kids, the last name Blanc, the last name, like, Lopez Iangulo. Those are the ones from previous marriages. So, yeah, they could move on.
Yeah.
But the kids that, I guess, came from Dr. LaLaurie.
No.
Yeah. If there were any kids from Dr. LaLaurie, I'm not sure because she was 45.
She had two, yeah.
She had two from him?
Yeah, no, he pumped her full of cum.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, she was French.
Good. Yeah, so she had seven children overall.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
But Madame LaLaurie was actually saved that day by one of the people she enslaved, her coachman.
Bastien.
He was pretty much Samuel Jackson's character in Django Unchained. He was the guy who got preferential treatment by informing on everybody else in the house.
He was also probably tapping that pussy.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. They were talking about how they were extremely familiar.
Ah,
yeah. And the husband's gone by this point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he's barely there.
The
yeah,
time,
she's
yeah.
kind of done some. They have like an 1830s version of divorce that they tried to do like twice that he didn't take.
Hmm. So after whipping back the crowd, this coachman got Madame LaLaurie out of New Orleans and brought her to Lake Pontchartrain, where she boarded a boat that took her across the water. Incredibly, though, Madame LaLaurie presumably ordered the coachman back to the mansion. Because while we don't know what happened to him, the carriage returned to Royal Street and it was destroyed by the mob. And then they stabbed the horses to death.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Don't be a horse.
Like, that's how long the anger went on. And that's how fucking angry the people were. It's like, as soon as like, that's her carriage. That's her fucking thing. And so they stabbed the horses. So, because they thought maybe she was still inside, stabbed the horses.
Inside
so she
the horse?
Yeah. Incredible. Like Ace Ventura. He was that being like, the poor horses just been like, I'm just basically a car. I don't need all of this mess.
God, just imagine being in a bar and someone's like, Laurie's carriage is back. We're going to go kill the horses.
And the legend is that Madame LaLaurie took a ship to New York and boarded a steamer for France. There, she satisfied her bloodlust with hunting, but was killed when a wild boar ripped her from stem to sternum. That, however, is wishful thinking, a hope that a violent person met a violent end. If she did go to France, she spent the rest of her days in Paris and died at the age of 62 after a long, hopefully painful illness.
Yeah, she lived at one address according to, if you believe she made it, she lived out there with her two daughters sitting in silence, just slowly rotting and suing anybody possible for any remaining inheritance money.
Mm-hmm.
Just going down to the fucking catacombs to beat one off.
Yeah, I've been like, you slap that bean.
Reportedly, when she did die, her body was returned to New Orleans, where it was interred at St. Louis Cemetery. No record, however, exists of where the body is located, if it is there at all.
Well, they have the, I believe, the tomb of the Blanks.
Yeah.
I believe that she is, that's where they believe she is that they popped the name off of the Blank guy. The main dude was buried there with enough room for an entire family.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was there, and they said they believe that she was also popped in there.
Yeah.
But there are no names on it anymore.
Yeah. Other accounts, however, claim that Madame LaLaurie never even left Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. No.
They say that she returned to New Orleans 8 years later, after the heat died down, and she died there in the late 1850s. This claim is supported by the recent discovery of legal paperwork that showed her handling her estate in New Orleans as late as 1850.
But there's some discrepancies because they thought it might have been her man.
Yeah.
Because she had guys. It was like an investment firm that was running her bullshit over in New Orleans from where she was in Gay Paris. And there's also word that one of her people wrote a letter saying, I forgot what the relation was, but like basically Madame LaLaurie has told us all about her staunch need to return to New Orleans soil and reclaim her name back in her homeland. And basically he's in this letter, it's very interesting. He's like, I'm going to have you money guys tell her how that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Because if she goes back, they're going to hang her.
Yeah.
Essentially. They're going to rip her to shreds.
Yeah.
Live from your grave.
But perhaps it's said that the Madame returned to New Orleans because many believe that her spirit still haunts her former mansion.
Mm.
See, since the LaLaurie family sold the mansion in 1837, it's had countless tenants and has gone through multiple incarnations. After it was sold to a man named Charles Caffin, he renovated and expanded the mansion, giving it a third story and the severe fortress-like appearance it has today that honestly makes it look even scarier than it did when Madame LaLaurie owned it. It's almost as if the house itself grew into its reputation.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he did it right.
He really did. No, it feels like he made it spooky on purpose.
Oh, yeah. I did look at a diagram on the inside. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It would be so nice if it wasn't all full of all that rage and death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go through, it's got the courtyard in the middle. It's nice. It's got a little fountain in there.
I love when a house has a courtyard in the middle of it.
Me too.
It's really nice. Pretty.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's very European. But it wasn't until 1889, with the publication of a book called The Haunted House in Royal Street, that the LaLaurie Mansion began to build its current reputation. That book included many of the stories we still hear today, like the ghost of the little girl named Leah, who jumped off the roof to escape Madame LaLaurie, who can sometimes be seen teetering on the edge, deciding what to do next. There were also reports of knocks, whispers, groans, the clanking of chains, and the shuffling of feet. But perhaps hoping to trade on this notoriety, the LaLaurie Mansion briefly became, of all things, a furniture store
yeah.
in 1892.
Went retail.
Yeah.
You know, people need their furniture. Hey. Now, they would see the ghost of the little girl up top of the house.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That is still seen to this day.
So do you think that you could call that a gurgoyle?
A gurgoyle. Quite possibly, yes.
Thank you.
Someone just made a new burlesque troupe.
Roller derby team.
Yeah, please. Roller derby team.
The gurgoyles.
Now, we don't know if this is true because it's in the more sensational LaLaurie book, but it was said that the chairs and sofas in this furniture store would regularly be found torn up and splattered with filth.
I've heard this a couple times. This is in other books. They talk about this story. This is one of the big LaLaurie Mansion hauntings.
Mm-hmm. Supposedly, each time a new piece of inventory entered the house, it would be covered with urine, feces, and blood by the next morning. And this continued even after they posted a guard with a shotgun. Other sources, however, say that this splattering of human waste only happened a couple times and could very well have come from all too human sources.
I do want to ask our listeners, sidestorieslpotl@gmail.com, that run retail on the first floor on Royal Street. I've won, but they have great art galleries over there. There's really cool spots over there. How many times have you had to deal with rivers of shit slopping all over your stuff?
It could just be people looking to get a deal. You know, I'm like, oh, this couch's covered in shit. On it.
Everyone, like, his shirt's soaked with shit. His hands are covered in piss.
I'm not paying full price for this.
You should have let me sit down. That's on you.
Now, over the years, it's been said that whoever came into possession of the house was soon haunted not just by ghosts, but personal misfortune.
Oh, yeah.
In 1893, the house was sold to an Italian immigrant named Fortunato Greco.
Should have named me Unfortunato.
And this is my wife, a Miss Fortune.
Oh, wow, that's good.
Yeah, that's good.
Wow, that's two of those in one word jokes.
Yeah. His nearby grocery store was never able to turn a profit. They said that's the curse of the LaLaurie Mansion. But in a story that runs contrary to that curse, Greco flipped his luck when he noticed that the house was becoming a tourist attraction due to the popularity of the book about the LaLaurie Mansion. So Greco started charging people a dime so they could take their own personal ghost hunts.
Oh, yeah. And then he just opened it up to everybody.
Yeah.
So it was like a boarding house. And then it was like, that was like what they say is like the true misfortune here was the fact that they just came in and a bunch of us shitheads, tourists, arrived and destroyed the whole fucking house.
Yeah.
Just ripped up the floors, just really destroyed it.
And this is like
what,
the 1920s?
No, this is 1890s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he set up concessions. He started selling merch. You know, like all the, because back in the day, like you could get really ghoulish souvenirs from places like this. Like like if you, like I remember when they dug up the Belle Gunness house, like you could go and I think you could buy like pieces of bone from her victims. Like just weird shit. Like the, there was also pictures of bodies was very common. Shit like this. Yeah, you could, you would probably walk away with something really awful.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Man, stupid regulations.
Sounds like this guy was successful.
He was. I mean, by 1895.
By leaning in.
Yeah, he leaned in. He opened a saloon on the ground floor.
Fuck yeah.
He called it the Haunted Exchange. Stayed open for a good 15 years, which I think in, you know, New Orleans bar life,
that's a
15
good run.
Years is a good run.
It was a good run, but I think it's because you leaned into the thing and you let the ghosts be employed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Give them an opportunity. Now, they're a part of the industry. They're, what's it, the buy-in employees things? What do you say with that idea where you have the employees?
Shareholders?
Yeah, they're shareholders.
Mm-hmm. But once the neighborhood became home to more Italian and Sicilian immigrants, many of the older buildings were turned into tenement housing, and the LaLaurie Mansion was no exception. It was during this period that a tenant in the LaLaurie Mansion was reportedly murdered in his room in a most brutal fashion. It was suspected to be a robbery gone bad because his room had been ransacked, but nothing of value was taken. Very much like poltergeist activity. Interestingly, though, one of his friends claimed that the victim had complained of being bothered by quote-unquote sprites before straight up saying that there was a demon in the house that would not rest until the victim met a bloody end. And soon after, that's exactly what happened.
Apparently, this is kind of where a lot of the ghost stories got legitimized, was during the tenement house days of the LaLaurie Mansion, where a lot of people said they saw stuff that was, you know, just straight up constant ghost activity.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine that's probably true, but it's still New Orleans. People get murdered.
It's still also,
yeah. You don't need a ghost to kill people in New Orleans. Yeah.
And like just the being a tenement house in and of itself makes the house sort of kind of crazy.
Yeah.
The atmosphere is kind of crazy. You never know what's going in and out. People bring chains from Italy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the LaLaurie Mansion remained an apartment building for most of the 20th century. But in 1969, a doctor named Harry Russell Albright bought the building outright and lived there for 30 years, where he said he never saw or heard anything that could be considered paranormal.
I just feel like that's a guy in one of those, like, latex bubble suits. You know what I mean? Where it's just like,
I didn't see anything crazy in this house at all. Meanwhile, he's got, like, a dozen roses jammed up his ass, and he's choking himself to sleep every night. Be like, nothing weird here. Yeah, I drink piss. Normal
This buckle doesn't make me bleed as much as this buckle.
Completely normal house.
But in 2006, the LaLaurie Mansion was purchased by none other than one of our finest actors, Sir Nicholas Cage.
Please, Mr. Cage, please, anybody out there in podcast land, we've been trying to reach you.
Yes.
We know that you have a form that you have to fill out to reach you. What do we have to do to get that form on the top of the pile? I want to meet you.
Yes.
By
so
the way,
badly.
I like that you called him Sir Nicholas Cage because I feel like he's an American knight.
Oh, yes.
I feel like he's American royalty.
Oh, yeah. He is. Yeah. Very much so. He's very important to us.
I was hoping you'd pick up on that. Reportedly, Cage wanted to use the LaLaurie Mansion to write, quote, the next great American horror novel. Although he admits he never got that far with the book.
Actors can't read. But that's not their fault. Their jobs are to emote.
They can read. They just can't write.
They can't write.
Yeah. They have to read the scripts. There's not like some sort of like script man who just tells lines to
act. No, that's what Ken does. Yeah, Ken calls me. He goes over the lines. I have an earpiece whenever I do it. Recently, I put an index card on the people on the other side. Oh, this is great.
Yeah.
That's all acting is done.
Yeah. You just put the blinders on them like a bunch of horses and just.
Someone bring him a salad. Is this sweet greens here?
I can't go without 20 cc's of chia seeds.
Well, according to Nicolas Cage, he didn't experience anything either, but he also refused to sleep in the house.
Mm.
He did, however, make a fun joke when he bought it. He said, other celebrities, they got beachfront property. I got ghostfront property. That means I got ghostfront property.
Thank God this book was never written.
He's not a writer. He's not a writer. Can you not do it like Nick Cage, though?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
I got,
you know, some people. You know, I'm trying to figure out how to do it. Like, it's ghostfront
property.
But in the end, Cage admitted that he bought the mansion pretty much because he'd been obsessed with the haunted mansion at Disneyland since he was a kid.
We know why you bought the mansion.
Where did he sleep?
Anywhere else. He had many homes.
He had many homes. Yeah,
in New Orleans?
Cage. Yeah. Okay. He bought the Lawlery Mansion in a haunted church.
Oh, okay. So he slept in the haunted church.
He was covering his fucking, he was covering all his angles.
I sleep next to the bells.
My problem is, with this place, is it's too well insulated.
Now, it's said that Nicolas Cage came to great misfortune during the 3 years he owned this house, and that his career hit the skids for a bit. But after checking out his IMDb page, the years 2006 to 2009 were pretty standard fare for Nick Cage.
But it was the beginning of the dip of his box office numbers. That's the key here, man.
Not quite.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not quite. There are while 2006, admittedly, that was Wicker Man.
Oh. Not the bees!
Not a bee! The bees!
He did get to punch several women.
he punched six or seven women?
All of the cult members as he walked down the line, you know?
Yeah, he punched a lot of people. Yeah, that was fun. And it could be argued that Wicker Man, over time, is a net positive for Nicolas Cage because we all talk about it all the time.
It's not a great film.
It's a horrible film. It's not even that fun to watch for kitschy purposes.
No, the worst thing that happened to Wicker since Fat Grandpa's.
Yeah.
But he also had a massively successful National Treasure sequel in 2007.
That's fine for the numbers. And Ghost Rider, though, which was a flop.
Ghost Rider was a flop. But in 2009, he got to work with Werner Herzog on Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Fucking love this movie.
Top three Nick Cage movie, probably one of the lowest performing movies that he had ever done.
It did. I read it did quite well. It did better than expected.
Did you ever use my lucky crack pipe?
Yeah.
My lucky crack pipe. That's what
it is. Shoot him again. His soul still dance. It's one of my favorite lines in the movie. I love Bad Lieutenant.
What really wiped out Nicolas Cage during this time was that he had a crooked manager who stole all his money. Plus, he got fucked pretty hard by the stock market crash of 2008.
Yeah, it can't be leveraged.
Neither of those things can be blamed on Madame Lawlery.
You know. And he had to sell all his comic books.
Yeah.
Lisa Marie Presley.
That was sad. He got that illegal dinosaur skull and he had to sell that back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it turned out it was illegal.
Man, how is a dinosaur skull illegal?
It's because it belongs in a museum.
Who gives a shit?
The museum.
Yeah, the museum cares. I think it was stolen from a museum.
Oh, it was stolen from
Basically, there's a lot Hobby Lobby. Goes through this. I wanted to do a whole episode about this. Maybe we will, but it's a lot. Talking about the illegal antiquities market is very interesting because there's a whole world on selling shit that is not supposed to be sold to anybody because those are all supposed to go to scientific research for the most part because that's who's paying to go dig it up. So they're supposed to go in various places, but then these guys come in, they basically steal it or they do their own illegal archaeological digs, which is fucking a great concept. The idea of being in one of those is really fucking
cool.
How
is it illegal? I guess if you're on like a national park or something, it's
not
your land.
Well, you have to sneak into a place that's largely either government owned or you have to, or it's kind of some kind of a national park, like some kind of endowed place that you're not supposed to be there for. I don't know all the rules. Side stories, lpotl@gmail.com. Please, if you are a student of archaeology, explain to me why it's bad to pirate bones. You can't download a skeleton.
Paleontology.
Yeah, whatever. Please, any one of you nerds.
However, it is rumored that during the years that Cage owned the home, he was suffering from terrible nightmares that he attributed to the curse of the Lawlery Mansion. He went to a medium who told him that the only way to break the curse and stop the nightmares was to buy a grave as close to Marie Laveau's as possible.
Yes, it's true. His grave is beautiful.
Now, this is prime graveyard real estate in New Orleans. This is St. Louis Cemetery number one. This is arguably some of the most sought-after graveyard real estate this side of Père Lachaise in Paris.
It's a nice. Yeah. It is a nice. You go down there, that's how you know you are New Orleans celebrity status.
Or at least your royalty. You know, people wanted, like, that's one of the places, if you get St. Louis Cemetery number one, your place in New Orleans history is assured.
Like, Drew Brees is going to be there.
I don't know if he will.
I don't know if he wants to be.
I don't know if he'll make it.
brought a Super Bowl back.
Yeah,
there.
Drew Brees, if Drew Brees wanted to be buried in St. Louis Cemetery number one, I think they'd let him.
At least Kermit Ruffins.
Yeah.
Can I get buried? I'm going to look this up. Terry, can I get buried
in St. Louis, Surrey, number 21. Oh, book. No, it's for tours. Okay, no, you can't just book it.
I don't think there's going to be protocol on the internet for it. Like, there's not going to be a form
how me
to fill
buried,
out.
How me buried St. Louis cemetery? Nothing.
It'd be cool if there was like trombone shorty got one. It was just like half a trombone sticking out the top.
Yeah, that'd be incredible. They're just not letting Imagineers in.
But in the end, Cage was somehow able to convince the diocese in charge of St. Louis number 1 to make room for the 9-foot-tall pyramid memorial that will one day be Nicolas Cage's final resting place.
Oh, yes.
They built it ahead of time. It's sitting there. Like, this big ass. It's called,
it's huge.
There's a, I think the Latin saying is like, out of everything one, or out of one everything, or
it
something like that.
It is very, it is absolutely gorgeous. It's a giant pyramid.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen it?
Yeah. It's awesome.
It's cool. Eventually, the bank foreclosed on Cage's house and the other haunted property he owned in New Orleans, the Our Lady of Perpetual Help Chapel. But he still held on to the pyramid only because the IRS can't legally take cemetery plots.
Dude, and this Fuck is yeah. why we discovered this right before the show. We're going to do our 2006-style movie, Living in a Cemetery, where if we all open up a morgue, like the three of us, we open a morgue and stuff. We ain't never gotta fucking pay nobody ever again. Nuh-uh. We just live in a cemetery, dog. Yeah.
Just come over to your mausoleum drawer and knock on it. You roll out.
That's me, buddy. That's my house. I got a flat screen in there. We're running cable from across the street. You know what I mean, man? You got it made in the shade, brother. Hello. You know, we fucking put ice out. So it's nice and cool.
Fucking pop a Cigarro song in the cemetery.
Every day, dude.
On the soundtrack. Like, no, if we're going straight 2006, we got to pop like a Shin song in there.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, Cigarro song.
Mr. Brightside.
Yeah.
Definitely. They put it back there. We have to invite Zach Braff.
Yeah, you have to know.
He has to come once a year.
This is going
to
be a vibe. Like, think like About Schmidt meets like Little Miss Sunshine. Ooh. When you get the vibe, like put it together. You know,
sprinkle some Seth Rogen in there.
Yeah.
We got some inappropriate. We got a guy farting. That's going to be big. Some weed, comedy.
You know, some gay jokes that don't age very well.
We get to live in the cemetery. You know what I mean? This is our lives, bro. This is past the pitch. This is what we're going to do.
No property taxes. King fucker.
Yeah, what are you going to do, government?
I'm so sick. You know, so sick.
Now, after the bank foreclosed on the LaLaurie Mansion, it was bought by a Texas businessman named Michael Whalen, who still apparently owns the house to this day, but has a very small footprint on the internet. Couldn't find out much about him.
Yes, and this is also the story. I love it. We got one of the listener emails mm-hmm. that was talking about a lady was on the French Quarter Phantoms tour, and she was walking on the, you know, you go to the, you get to the end, and all of a sudden you're hearing all the story about the LaLaurie Mansion, and this woman freaks the fuck out. She starts calling like
well, she
somebody.
Says like, did you pay them? Have you been paid to say this? Have you been paid to say this about this house? And they're the ghost there is like, I don't know what you're talking about.
And they say, watch her walk away, make a call. And basically you find out that she is personal friends with Michael Whalen. And they and her family were told to stay at the LaLaurie Mansion for the weekend and had never heard the story about what fucking happened in there. And so she's like, we are getting a fucking hotel. We're getting a hotel. And they're like, freaked out.
Ooh, it's haunted. Oh, how risque.
Yeah. And then you find out, like, because that's the thing. Haunting stories are haunting stories.
Sure.
But then this is the fucking worst level it's of like, a haunting story.
It's like you show up and I'm like, oh yeah, you're staying at John Wayne Gacy's house tonight. Mm-hmm. You know, like, have fun. Welcome to Des Plaines.
I mean, same time.
I'd do it.
I know you. I know you would do it, but if you're just a regular fucking person.
Now, would you stay in the floorboards?
Uh-oh, too big.
Yeah, one listener who actually attended a party at the LaLaurie Mansion, they said that the current decor was, quote, sentient cocaine.
That's awesome.
That's
awesome.
How they, yeah, it's just very tacky, extraordinarily tacky.
On the same block, I was looking it up, there's a place called the Haunted Hotel where you can go and people say that they've been seeing ghosts there. I don't know if I believe them. These are Google reviews.
It's probably just a guy in a sheet.
Yeah, this one lady said she went with her mom. And she did tell her mom was haunted and she was mad. And she said they wouldn't call it haunted because the ghost was very nice.
Oh, that is. Oh, that's very cute.
It's shared.
Yeah.
Pre-lived.
Yeah. It's like when you do an Airbnb and there's like a guy living in the back house and you just got to live with him for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just always out there hosing things down. It's like, why are you out there? I'm trying to sleep.
You come out here, I'll hose you down too.
I know you will. I know you will.
But as the years have gone by, so too have the stories of Madame La Lurie's cruelty grown beyond the realm of the grotesque. And now they sometimes include her husband as a sort of Dr. Mengele type accomplice.
I am innocent! I am innocent! I let go to break in the bank.
Yeah, what did you call him, Henry? Mississippi Mengele?
Yeah, Mississippi Mengele.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and the stories are outlandish. I mean, they claim that, you know, Dr. La Lurie broke a woman's bones and refashioned her into a crab woman.
Cool.
Another says, as a claim, that, like, turned a woman into an armless, legless worm. Like, difficult. Have you ever seen Todd Browning's Freaks?
No, but I have seen Freaked, and I really like that movie.
Freaked is a great movie. Freaked is awesome. But no, Todd Browning's Freaks, there's a guy in the movie that's just a torso, and he can, like, you know, roll his own cigarettes with his, you know, with his own lips.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And like,
I mean, it's upsetting for him, but it's very cool that
he flipped it and reversed it. He was living a pretty good life.
He figured it out for himself. That's what you gotta do.
Yeah, he's in that fucking final awesome scene where they're all, like, they're all about to fucking take down the acrobat, and they're all, like, crawling through the mud and the rain, and, like, he's got a fucking dagger in his teeth.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's such a great fucking movie.
Fuck yeah, I'll watch
such
that
a good
shit.
Movie.
Remember the worm guy from Freaked?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, tell anything about it.
He's like, would you wipe my ass?
Would you wipe my ass? Oh, my other favorite line is from Randy Quaid, the fiddle fat. Love that fucking movie.
Now, the floor of the chamber in this story was permanently slick from puddles of fresh gore. Mm-hmm. Buckets of body parts were strewn about the room, helter-skelter.
Yep. That's the worst part. It's not organized.
No.
Like, you get a fucking, get him a container store employee.
Is that what helter-skelter means?
All over the place, yeah.
Okay.
Willy-nilly. It's a scarier version of willy-nilly.
Oh, my God. Imagine if they wrote willy-nilly all over the walls of blood. Like,
it would have taken the temperature down. Yeah. Like, actually, maybe the hippie movement's still alive.
Yeah. Oh, man, it would have taken him so long to figure out. Like, I want to see, like, the detective. It's like, willy-nilly, what's another name?
Did Caesar do this? Yeah. Sorry to cut you off.
I'll always concede the floor to a said Caesar joke.
Yeah, the willy-nilly goo-goo gaga baby pants murders? Yeah.
I don't know if that works. But really, there's no need to make Madame La Lurie worse than she already was. Even without the more extreme claims, Madame La Lurie is still one of the great villains of American history, the star of a particularly evil chapter in a book that is itself already evil enough.
Well, thank you for that! Spooky! Spooky!
Sorry, that's my very rare occurrence of my Madame La Lurie voice.
I will take a bow!
She was a very bad man.
Yeah.
She's bad. Bad
she's
bitch.
Awful. Yeah, she was awful. I'm
glad she's fucking dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. We're all happy she's dead and not an immortal being.
No, I mean, God knows. She could still be there.
You think so?
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Weirdo things that happen.
It is good that she's a ghost if she is a ghost. You know, tortured.
Yeah, she'll be stuck there. Yeah, it'd be good. Yeah. It's a beautiful piece of property, though.
Yeah, it's like
it's a shame.
It's worth like I think Nicolas Cage bought it for $3.7 million.
Damn. Yeah. It's a hard at the fucking... Royal Street's probably one of my favorite streets.
Yeah.
In that area.
Like, there's a good African restaurant next door. I was looking for food. Mm. And because I'm going to go. I got to go now.
We are.
Yeah.
We're going to go. We can't wait. We're doing it up.
Yeah, we're going to be. I'm very excited about our return to New Orleans.
Now, guys, first of all, I just want to say next week's episode is going to be absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited for it because it's been a second before we've gone. How do we say we're getting sludgy.
Sludgy, I think, is a real good word for it. There's going to be a lot of goop.
Nice.
There's going to be, I think we might return to some sloughing.
Oh, no, there's some sloughing in there.
There's definitely some sloughing. There's going to be some hydraulic pumps involved.
You're going to like it. You're going to like the way you throw up.
Hmm?
Mung.
There's, we'll see about that. And then, you know, we got a little Thanksgiving. So we got a couple of special things coming up. And then we're going to get into hopefully a super sad story for Christmas. Right, Marcus?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be Christmas time and everyone's going to be real sad about what we're going to be talking about.
I love sad stories during Christmas time.
You see, my thing is that we get into arguments. Me and Marcus will get into arguments because I take it out on the audience. My feelings about Christmas.
And I think that it's a bad idea to take anything out on the audience.
I couldn't agree more.
You just got to get in there. I feel sad. You're feeling fucking sad, too. Yes. Well, we might do some dark history.
Yeah.
I think we will. I think for Christmas, we're going to be doing some real dark history, some cool shit.
Just talk about all the families that, you know, burn down their Christmas trees and kill everyone. Every Christmas, a family dies.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, last year we did talk about a killer Santa that brought a flamethrower to a family Christmas party and killed, I think, how many? Four or five?
Yeah, he was intense, man. He was not ready for the holidays.
But he bought all his guns down at Gun World on Burbank. On Magnolia.
They sell a lot of, it's in Burbank. Yeah, they sell a lot of guns there.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know Burbank's one of the highest, they sell some of the most guns in the nation in Burbank.
Oh, yeah, dude. How do you think, I mean, Alan Thicke has to defend himself. All right. The backbone of Hollywood.
Man, during the pandemic, there were lines around the block at Gun World.
Oh, I remember.
It was fucking crazy.
It added to the vibe.
Yeah.
But thank you guys so much. Go get Operation Sunshine at your local comic book store. It's coming out. The next one will probably be November 15th. That is issue 2 of our first 4. That will then lead to a second 4. But right now, you're going to get into that story. I'm very excited for you to see where it goes. We also have the last comic book on the left, 4, I believe, is also cooking.
It's cooking. Yes. And and I can announce now that, for issue 4 or volume 4, I'm going to be doing a story. I wrote a story that fucking comics legend Matt Wagner drew son Brendan Wagner did the coloring for it. And it looks absolutely fucking incredible. Thank you very much to both of you.
Very cool.
Both of you fellas for working with me on that one. That was a fucking, it's incredible. I can't wait for you guys to see it.
So cool. And then you got dates, right?
Oh, yeah. If you can catch me down in Florida December 8th and 9th. I'm going to be opening for Jeff Ross in West Palm Beach at the Kravis Center. I can't wait. And I'm trying to find a show on the 10th as well. And then I'm going to the Dolphins game on the 11th.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Oh, I also wanted to say, I've been loving the videos. They're of our show.
Yeah, yes.
It's been great. It's on YouTube. You got clips on YouTube, so follow the YouTube page.
Good fucking point.
And then go to the Patreon and watch the fucking full thing.
That's what I'm fucking talking about. We got the Twitch streams. We're doing that. We're working a lot.
Yeah, we're working a lot. No Dogs in Space does a live stream every other Monday on twitch.tv/lastpodcastnetwork.
Yeah, and I got my first mandate coming up for the stream. I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's gonna be amazing. Very, very excited. Guys, hail sweet Satan.
Not hail game.
Hail Satan again.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Double up.
Do it twice.
Double up. You know why? Because this is coming out as the day after Halloween. So you've already expressed yourselves. And man,
what's coming out on the 3rd? 3 days after all.
But this thing.
It's the day after All Souls Day, which is very appropriate.
Yeah, our show hasn't come out on a Wednesday in like 9 years.
Oh, man. Oh, God.
Well, yesterday was All Souls Day. This is a ghost story, so it works out.
Enjoy yourself with it. Got a fucking Halloween shit.
Be good to yourselves, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
I'm fine.
Yeah, you're okay. You didn't just fucking fall into a 9-year-old hole.
Help me.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.